Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, Chapter 8. Robert hated insomnia because it made it harder to act jovial and energetic during the day. Shane had a conscience. His father did not. He could not tell about his mother because she was so outward-focused that it was hard to penetrate any of her inner processes. It was like trying to see what was beyond a searchlight, pointing right at you. Robert wondered, on occasion, if he had a conscience. Chloe had one, for sure. He felt the agony she experienced when breaking up with him, the regret, the concern. Her tenderness towards Shane was unmistakable. I kind of loved and hated her for that, thought Robert in the dark. Occasional lights swept over the ceiling from the headlights of turning cars, reminding him of endlessly sitting in the back seat of the family car with Shane as a boy. Shane pointed at the windshield wipers going back and forth, forever, one approaching the other arcing away. "That's us," whispered Shane. And again, a turning car lit up his face through the rain-streaked windows, rivulets coursing down his cheeks like a waterfall of sorrow. They used to pick rivulets at the top of the window and watch them race down to see which of theirs would win. But the game got annoying to Robert because it was so passive. Years later, he realized that Shane liked the game because he never really won against Robert. Either Robert didn't play Shane's games, or Shane lost to Robert's. Robert always shied away from any sphere he could not win in. So Shane loved the rivulet game, and also the which one is highest card game war. "Not even a game," sneered Robert, grabbing the entire deck. "Let's play 52 card pickup." "Sounds great," cried Shane eagerly. Robert had hurled all the cards across the room. "Go pick them up, Shaney, all 52. Shane had gone to gather them all together since he would have gotten in trouble otherwise. Robert felt contempt for his older brother, a radioactive wave that seemed to leech the strength from Shane's bone marrow. Robert had seen a terrifying figure once at a coffee shop when his mother argued with a barista about filling up her personal to-go mug instead of killing dolphins with paper cups. And Robert had seen, from his relatively low vantage, an old fool. A man in his, Robert was too young to even guess his decade, but super old, was giggling and joking with another barista. Pathetic, begging for attention, exorbitantly tipping just to get a forced laugh from a pretend granddaughter. And Robert had felt his young spine chill with terror. That one can be old and still a fool. The next year, Robert had been at a movie and listened to two old women bickering about the number of calories in popcorn depends on the amount of butter, really, and had turned around to see a very old woman arguing with a merely old woman. The merely old woman said, "Mom, fat isn't bad for you. Read something published after 1950. The nagging and insulting had continued in whispered intensity all through the previews, and Robert had sunk down in his seat, appalled to his bones that people could get that old and still be petty idiots. He wished his father were there to turn and snarl at them to grow up and shut up. But he was just a kid, so they would have turned on him ferociously, then called the manager, whined and lied, and gotten him kicked out. And he really wanted to see the devil in Max Devlin. "You can't fight manipulators," his instincts warned him, "because no one can see lies or liars." It's why he hid downstairs with his dad when Shane and his mother were upstairs. He didn't even really care about hockey. It was so hard to follow the puck on the curved screen. But he knew that pretending to cheer downstairs was infinitely better than being droned to death upstairs. His mother had tried that rambling stuff with him, but his dad had half stormed into the sunroom and rescued him, making up. It almost amazed Rob how fluidly and effortlessly his father lied. A baseball tryout at school the next morning, and so the need to practice catching and throwing in the backyard until the moon rose and the satellites drifted through the overdark, only visible to Robert's young eyes. His father never chatted, never asked questions. He observed keenly, barked orders for improvement, encouraged excellence. And nothing else, really. He assembled Robert's skills, just as Gene disassembled Shane's connection with the outside world. When coaching, John no more chatted with Robert than he would have started a conversation with a cabinet he was assembling. Don't engage, just grimly build. Now, as a new lawyer, Robert's days were so busy reading, redlining, asking, and researching that his mind only came out to play at night. He had been working at Warren and Barron Legal Solutions for just over a year and already needed glasses. Peter Warren had assigned him to an underling to be brought along, but had recently started including Robert in meetings with clients, just to observe, don't talk. Robert's days felt like being shot out of a cannon, flying through curved computer screens and past heavy law library books, past scowling faces and imminent disaster scenarios, and then landing on a sticky bus seat at the end of the day, hoping that he would not be followed and attacked on the lure of his expensive suits. Helen got home before him, since she never had to work late. She was a secretary to the CEO of a suit company who constantly flirted with her and told her she was destined for better things. She would make up grand goals just to wind him up. I want to be a filmmaker. And he would offer to introduce her to the right people. She would always find ways to avoid these meetings, still working on that screenplay. And he would get impatient and tell her that there was more than one way to get where you wanted to be in life. Touch your ear, he had said once. Helen raised her left hand and touched her left ear. That's one way, he said, flashing her a grin. Check this out. He reached his left hand over his head and touched his right ear. He looked so ridiculous that Helen had to bite her cheek to keep from laughing out loud. See, he said smugly, I'm touching my ear, right? Right, she murmured, apparently lost in rank admiration at the zen wisdom of her guru boss. Think outside the box. You can end up on this side of the desk, my dear. But you inherited this company from your daddy, thought Helen, but of course kept her mouth shut because bonus season was almost upon them. She knew that her boss gave her extra to help encourage her potential, which she deeply enjoyed spending on lingerie for Robert's eyes only. Cucking pathetically desperate men was a constant hobby of hers. Another car swept by the window. The rent was cheap, but the tiny house was on a corner, so turning drivers constantly stared through the windows in daylight, and headlights lit up the room at night. Go to sleep, whispered Helen suddenly, startling Robert from his reveries. Why are you up? I don't know, said Robert peevishly. Why are you up? I always know when you're not sleeping, said Helen shortly. She plumped her pillow and sat up slightly. Is there something on your mind? She asked slowly, mechanically. Good fake empathy, thought Robert, not without admiration. I'm thinking about the past. That's a great way to wreck your future, bro. Peter, he sighed. You know, I'm doing these meetings now. Yeah, the monk meetings where you can't speak. Right. I catch him looking at me. Peter, like, even more than the client, sometimes. He's gay for you. I said that first time I met him. My gaydar is beyond reproach. Robert laughed softly. No, bi maybe, not gay. Same difference. Oh, I hate that phrase. Live with it. There was a pause. They were barely play fighting, nothing personal. So, there's this guy, I'll call him Joe. Today, so he's being sued. Nothing criminal, although maybe it should be. He runs this real estate development company. He's been getting investment for a housing development. Nice brochures, good website, great prospectus. Building is supposed to start next month. He's told everyone, his investors, that the permits are all secured. But he only applied like last month. And it's in, well, let's just say it's a year at best till anything gets approved. Helen's eyes were dark, amused. She played with the cotton rose on her breastbone. So this other guy, a lead investor, he goes to the building site. And of course, it's just a field, a big field. Joe did buy the land, so it's fenced. But of course, there's nothing there. No workers, no, I don't know, what are those little construction buildings called? No machines, no diggers, nothing. And this investor goes and hires a private investigator, digs up some kind of shady stuff on Joe. So you defend your clients, right? Outcome is up to the jury. Robert smiled slightly sadly. Yeah, no, I'm not being some kind of cliche, babe. I don't care about defending, well, helping defend people who are guilty as hell. That's the job. Surgeons shouldn't be surprised at blood. I get it. So what? Helen was still impatient, but now also a little curious. So I'm grinding through discovery and I come across a hidden folder on Joe's server. I just happened to have show hidden system file turned on because Helen waved a hand. Okay, don't nerd me back to sleep, kiddo. Right. So I go into this hidden folder. Why? Didn't even think about it. I saw it. I might have to testify. So I go in and there's a bunch of documents and emails. And you just dug in? Robert nodded. Well, that was dumb. Robert nodded again. Well, I can't undo it now. So what was in this buried treasure? Oh, it's terrible. It's Joe telling his accountant that it's all mostly smoke and mirrors, saying he doesn't have the permits yet, and telling him to wire $500,000 to an account in the Cayman Islands. Seriously shady. So you turn that over, does it become fraud? I doubt it. Could be. He loses, for sure. It looks pretty bad for us. Helen smirked. Oh, but you get such a great reputation for integrity and following with honor the glorious letter of the law. Chloe would never have said that, thought Robert suddenly. She would have taken this seriously. What? Demanded Helen, suddenly suspicious. Oh, it's just that I told Peter about all this. Oh, crap. Yeah. And he said it's all just draft documents. Incomplete. Rambling. Like a diary, I think he said. And to just delete it. He gave me a disk that deletes files so they can't be recovered. And he said to take any hard copies off-site and shred them and pay in cash. Helen grinned. The man is decisive. I don't... Robert hesitated. Helen's heart felt like an ice wall. She said nothing, staring straight ahead. Robert was silent. There was some kind of test coming from her. After a minute, she sighed explosively. Oh, please don't tell me you're having a moral crisis. I don't have a barf bag handy. No, I'm cautious. Helen pursed her lips. Cautious is good. I mean, what are the odds of getting caught? I've gone down all the avenues. Shredding is good. Burning might be better. The files are totally gone from the server. I looked that up. This program writes 5 sets of random data over the deleted sectors. That could be detected on a physical audit, but they'd need a cause for that, a warrant. But they don't know what they don't know, right? Isn't that the beauty of discovery? Robert laughed. I can see why your pervy boss always tells you you're destined for bigger and better things. I am big brain, said Helen simply. No one's going to find out, but I am bound by professional ethics, of course. You know, the law society's code. Helen barked a sharp laugh. Ha! Oh, come on. That's just for public consumption. You know that, right? Like how we pretty people always say that looks aren't important, but we always end up with each other. It's just noises we make so we don't get lynched. I'm supposed to report him. And I'm still kind of fresh out of law school, right? It feels like cheating. Oh, God, Robert, life is cheating. Did you earn your pretty face? Did I? What about your family's money and connections? It's all cheating. Even your school smarts, my street smarts, it's all instinct and luck and who the hell knows? Just... She took a deep breath, trying to quell the eruption of her caustic cynicism. Babe, it's just a... She glanced at the red numbers of the alarm clock. 3:33 in the morning thing. You saw a... God, what was Peter's total compensation? 2.8 million. Helen laughed giddily. Be nice not to have cars staring in our windows all the time, right? I don't care about a yacht, but some comfort, right? And he got there with his ethics and all his partners. That's the way the world is, babe. You don't need me to tell you that. The Liberals stole, what, 100 million? Don't you rail against the national debt all the time? It's all theft and cheating. You either take or get taken from. Her face was tight, almost alien. And you know who gets taken from? All the dumb people who worry about taking. I know, I know. I think of what my dad would say. It's a real cliche. The only crime is getting caught. And I don't care about this Joe guy or his investors, really. Just a bunch of greedy boomers wanting something for nothing. They raised kids who don't want kids, so they just need to prop up the value of their real estate. They don't care about my generation. Why should I care about theirs? He shuddered suddenly. It's just... It gives people power over me to break ethics in this way. And I hate losing power. Who has power? Peter, of course. But he's implicated, said Helen smoothly. He gave the orders. There's no proof of that. It's weird. It's like he likes me or wants to bring me along, groom me, Helen laughed. But I also know that he would dump me like day-old coffee if I proved inconvenient. And if I try to report him, he can just turn it on me somehow. I'd need to get proof. You can record him, right? Yeah, that's legal, but hell on wheels, that's quite an escalation. Taking down a senior partner, a named partner, I'd never work in the field again. Well, said Helen smugly, that's your answer then. What? If you're honest and follow your professional ethics and get Peter disciplined or disbarred, and no other lawyers will touch you with a 10-foot pole, then the whole profession is corrupt, and you either join them or learn how to make their coffees. Robert started his sentence automatically, then realized he had nothing to say. Tell me I'm wrong. I dare you. Robert frowned. Yeah. You see, it's all for show. My boss is married, but it's just for show. Your dad is super successful, just for show. Your mother got a nose job. Whoa! Wait, what? Oh, I guess that was girl talk then. Helen leaned forward and spoke slowly. Your mother got a nose job. Why? For show. Try to keep up, Robbie dearest. Wow. That's why you didn't see her for a few weeks last fall. Should I have noticed that? Well, you are a man. It was subtle, but effective. Okay. Robert shook his head slightly. Only Shane is not for show. Helen nodded soberly. Yeah, I used not to think so. Suffering addict artist. But he's real. That's the consolation prize for having nothing to show. But hey. Robert. What? Forget about being used, revealed. You've got to grab your power. Seeing his confusion, Helen grinned and plunged on. Peter wants you to do something unethical, right? Right. So use it. Get a leg up. Get a bonus. Do some tit for tat, for the love of God. Robert's eyes widened in the dark. Hold his feet to the fire? Jesus. How do you think he got to where he got to? Playing by the rules? Do you love me? What? Yes, of course. Well, did you get me by playing by the rules? Or were you with Clingy Chloe when you stalked me on the beach at Wasaga? Robert smiled thinly.
Damn, that bikini.
My figure is why we don't have kids. Even I wasn't playing by the rules. Oh, look at little old innocent me just doing my playful cartwheels in my red bikini. She laughed heartily. It's all a game, Robert. Don't stop playing now. You're way too young.